We're going through something absolutely historic.
Technologies across the board are growing exponentially.
It's a disruption that's going to completely redefine the way businesses compete.
In the next decade, we're going to lose 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies.
The exponential growth of computing is continuing.
AI is nowhere near its full potential.
Whether you like it or not, that the future cannot be stopped by anyone.
Hi there, everybody. This is Mark Verbenkov, and welcome back to the Future Tech and Foresight podcast. This is episode number 124. So today we're going to be looking at quantum computing. I haven't really looked at this subject before on the podcast, shame on me, apart from, I guess, a couple comments here and a little bit of news articles there. I think one was looking at Google's quantum supremacy. But today we'll be looking at things at a little bit more of a higher level, so kind of a shorter episode. And hopefully in the future I'll be bringing on an expert guest to talk about quantum computing and dive a little bit further into it. But for today, let's start by looking at the differences between classical and quantum computing so that we can kind of understand what this technology or what this emerging technology actually is. So the digital age that we live in today is really powered predominantly by classical computing. At its core, classical computers operate using bits. You can kind of picture them as microscopic switches that can be flipped on and off. Then they're, of course, represented by the binary system, zeros and ones. So every website that you visit, every picture you take with your smartphone, and even this podcast you're listening to right now, all of it, it's ultimately a stream of these zeros and ones processed at really fast speeds. But there's a limit to how fast and efficient classical computers can become. As we try to make them faster, we're essentially miniaturizing their components to fit more of them on a chip. But as I've mentioned before, we're nearing the physical limits of this miniaturization. So that's where quantum computing enters. So it's not just about being faster. These computers are fundamentally different in how they operate. Instead of bits, they use quantum bits or qubits. So thanks to the principles of quantum mechanics, a qubit can exist not just in a state representing zero or a state representing one, but in a state of superposition, where it can be both a zero and a one simultaneously. This means that with just a few qubits, a quantum computer can process a vast amount of information at once. Furthermore, there's another quantum phenomenon called entanglement, where qubits that have interacted with one another become interlinked. Change the state of one entangled qubit, and its partner will instantly change, irrespective of the distance between them. So, of course, this interconnectedness then offers another layer of computational power. In essence, though, while classical computing is like flipping switches on or off, quantum computing is a little more akin to kind of spinning tops, where the speed and direction of the spin and its relationship with other tops adds a new dimension to computing capabilities. So hopefully that's clear, and if we understand this core difference, then we can trace back to some of the more significant milestones that I think really brought quantum computing to where it is today, and especially into the minds and to the awareness of most people that are paying attention to these kinds of interesting technologies that are coming about today. So as I hope most of you are aware, quantum theory isn't really new. It's been around for over a century. However, the practical idea of quantum computing was proposed already back in the 1980s. So the road from theory to realization has seen its share of challenges, with scientists and researchers constantly grappling with kind of these inherent intricacies and sensitivities of the quantum realm. But apart from all that, I think what really brought myself and many others that I know towards the field of quantum computing is this term quantum supremacy, which I'm sure most of you have come across before. So at its core, quantum supremacy is kind of the threshold where a quantum computer can perform a task that is practically impossible for classical computers to execute within any kind of reasonable amount of time. It's not just about speed, but it's more about solving problems that were previously deemed unsolvable by classical means. So most notably, in 2019, Google made the tech community aware of quantum computing by announcing that they had achieved quantum supremacy with their 53-qubit quantum computer named Sycamore. In their claim, Sycamore performed a specific calculation in just over 3 minutes, a task that would supposedly take the most advanced supercomputer thousands of years to complete. This, of course, was a landmark moment, showcasing the potential prowess of quantum machines. However, it's essential to understand that this doesn't necessarily mean that quantum computers are generally superior to classical ones. It's a specialized kind of superiority for very specific problems. IBM, of course, as another significant player in quantum computing research, did contest Google's claim, suggesting that the task could actually have been optimized better on classical systems. So the debate around Google's announcement underscores the kind of nascent and competitive nature of this field. And I think that it emphasizes that we're still in the early days of understanding the full potential and, of course, limitations of quantum computers. So with this in mind, I think it's all the more interesting to look at what promises for the future quantum computing actually holds. And typically what I like to do on this podcast is look at the applications or kind of the deeper impacts that emerging technologies could bring to the future and our civilization. So I'll list a couple of the, I think, the more interesting and maybe the more relevant application areas that quantum computing might be impacting and revolutionizing. The first that I came across a significant number of times was, of course, medicine. So new drugs currently cost an average of $2 billion and take over 10 years to reach the market. Quantum computing, however, promises to revolutionize this by making drug discovery and design more efficient, reducing reliance on trial and error, thus bringing these medicines to market faster and through a significantly cheaper cost. Next, we have logistics, where we could see route planning undergo a transformation. These quantum computers have the potential to reduce freight transportation costs and improve global routing optimization, specifically elevating consumer satisfaction, but of course, finding a number of other kind of efficiencies with routes. You can have, you know, lowered gas costs, you could have faster times, all sorts of things that would bring about maybe not a revolution to logistics, but certainly drastic efficiencies that the entire industry could see. Next is something that I talked about very early on the podcast, and this is digital security, specifically as it relates to cryptocurrencies and blockchain. So quantum computers pose a challenge to the current encryption methods safeguarding our entire digital world. They really have the potential to decrypt secure data, prompting a need for new encryption techniques, but also potentially unraveling the entire cryptocurrency industry. And this is why, if you've ever read any white papers for specific cryptocurrencies, especially back in the day, they always had a section that would talk about how they are thinking about new encryption methods that would deal with potential quantum computers and their possibility of decrypting these different kind of blockchains. And finally, of course, there's artificial intelligence. So quantum computing kind of introduces or has the potential to introduce new horizons in artificial intelligence. So with the capacity to process vast quantities of data at really unprecedented speeds, quantum algorithms can enhance AI capabilities, especially in areas like facial recognition or fraud detection, not to mention all of the generative artificial intelligence industry possibilities. It's pretty interesting. There's been lots of articles written on this aspect specifically, and maybe in the future episode with a expert guest, we'll have to dive and kind of drill down on how quantum computing will really impact artificial intelligence, and then of course artificial intelligence impacting quantum computing. It's, I think, quite an interesting loop to dig into a little bit more. So as promising as all of these applications sound, every innovation, of course, comes with its challenges, and quantum computing is, of course, no exception. So there is skepticism about this technology. Even though there's sufficient excitement around it, this kind of enthusiasm is met with a healthy dose of skepticism, specifically among some in the scientific and tech communities. So to date, While there are mathematical proofs that suggest quantum computers will far surpass classical computers, these remain largely untested in practical scenarios. So there's a computer scientist at the University of Texas at Austin, Scott Aronson, and he observes that many of the claimed use cases for quantum computing are either marginal in their benefits, speculative, or both. There's also the other added aspect that building quantum hardware itself is no easy feat. Data in quantum computers is stored in quantum binary digits, known as qubits, as I mentioned before. These qubits can be created using various technologies, ranging from superconducting rings to optical traps. Some require conditions as extreme as near absolute zero temperatures, while others operate comfortably at room temperature. So the disparity in approaches and the inherent challenges in standardizing them has resulted in wide-ranging designs. For instance, while some designs propose machines as large as football pitches, others imagine quantum computers compact enough to be installed in vehicles. So another significant challenge has been defining a consistent measure of performance for quantum computers. Without a universal metric, comparing advancements and benchmarking them against classical computers can, of course, become quite tricky. However, looking forward, there's an undeniable allure about what the next decade might actually bring. So as we gaze into the horizon in the next decade in quantum computing, several, I think, profound shifts kind of become apparent. Quantum computers might transform from their kind of rarefied labs into more mainstream roles, potentially revolutionizing areas from AI to material science, as I mentioned before. But the challenge of quantum computing-driven security threats will hasten the development of new encryption methods, ensuring data safety in a post-quantum world. So there's going to be this vast explosion if, of course, quantum computing actually becomes practical in the areas of encryption and cybersecurity. So we'll see, I believe, large booms in jobs and entire industries that comes with, you know, creating cybersecurity aspects in the next 10 or 20 years. Economically, nations and corporations investing heavily in quantum research stand to reap significant advantages, possibly reshaping global tech leadership. But with this quantum leap come inevitable ethical and societal questions. From controlling such computational might to addressing the implications of quantum intelligent AI models. As we stand on this precipice, the quantum revolution promises to be as transformation as any other in our digital history. And I'm really looking forward to diving into this topic a little bit deeper, as I think this is really only scratching the surface. And as I mentioned, it's just meant to be kind of a high-level look at quantum computing. And from many of the articles that I read to prepare for this little podcast episode, there is significantly more to dive into and to kind of understand how this emerging technology might be very impactful for the future of our civilization and for, of course, all the different industries that will be using this technology in the future. But until then, thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week. I think I have a really interesting discussion on the future of autonomous long-haul trucks from Too Simple down in the States. So looking forward to sharing that with all of you next week. Well, thanks for listening to this week's Future Tech and Foresight podcast. If you like what you've heard here, there are, of course, a number of ways that you can support the podcast. The best way would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give a rating on Spotify, which you can find a step-by-step explanation for on the futuretechandforesight.com website. Alternatively, feel free to leave a comment either on the episode show notes or the YouTube channel where you can see video recordings of the interviews. And finally, if you are part of an organization that is aware of the disruptive and transformational impact that emerging and future technologies will bring and want to know more, please get in touch to hear about the strategic foresight services that we offer and how we can help future-proof your organization and take advantage of the phenomenal opportunities available to survive and thrive in the future.
A lot of future-shocked people and future-shocked institutions in our society are simply overwhelmed.
Once there is superintelligence, the fate of humanity may depend on what the superintelligence does.
Science fact is catching up to science fiction.
The first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention that humanity needs to make.
The only scarcity that will exist in the future is that which we decide to create ourselves as humans.
Within a 10-year design revolution, we can have all humanity living the highest and living anybody's ever known.
Progress is accelerating at an exponential pace, and it's going to reach a point where progress is so fast it's going to be a singularity.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens.
Every single headline points to the birth pangs of a Type 1 civilization.